It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Ernest Hancock, and, Thomas wasn't afraid, and a lot of people weren't afraid. This guy they're talking about, Thomas just came in, he's only hourly, he just came in and said that this guy had been some of the sign parties before, so he did look familiar. I think I've seen him before. I think I've seen him when I was in New Hampshire, and, a lot of these guys, he's a free stater, he went to New Hampshire, his live free or die state, we're going to get a bunch of libertarians to go and just kind of be in one place, and maybe we can start carrying our firearms legally. What the heck? See what happens. Well, this is what happens. Now, one thing that they did, they made sure that they tried to demonize this as much as they could, but here in Arizona, man, it just doesn't flush very well, and people don't get all worked up and everything, but what was going on at the same time? Earlier yesterday, they had the Southern Law Poverty Center there. Drew and Jet went down, caused a ruckus, got some interesting footage and stuff they'll have up, and got to interview the woman, too. And we'll hear about that. But the thing is that we have an opportunity to get a behind-the-scenes look, because this is what Freedom's Phoenix does. Reigniting the flames of freedom, uncovering the secrets, and exposing the lies. That is our theme. Why? Our slogan, uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. Do you have secrets that need to be uncovered? Yeah. Exposing the lies? Yeah. So what happens, that cut that we just did with Thomas, that's the only segment that they don't have on their webpage. When you go and you look at it, it's gone. And I called the newsroom. Thomas doesn't know this. I called the newsroom this morning. And I go, what up with that? And he's, don't blame me, man. Don't blame me. So tell me what happened. They called you because you're associated with one of the web pages this other guy's on. You're like, 4 degrees of separation. So you got tapped. So they come down, and how'd they wind up coming here? You just invited them to come down here?
Yeah. I just had invited them to come on down here. We had the Statue of Liberty in the background. I didn't get that completely in there, but we also were able to put the Alex Jones fascism poster up in my video that's on the internet. And they just went to the We the People.
Oh, the Joker thing. It had that on the wall behind you. I know. They're careful to cut some stuff. You don't get everything you want.
I got it in mind.
If it's not on your forehead, you didn't have. Yeah, and the hat that you wore is Ron Paul No IRS.
Right.
Shirt and Ron Paul Revolution. I mean, a hat and a Ron Paul Revolution shirt. So they knew where you were coming from. And that's why they treat us so much differently here, because you sure you want to mess with the revolution? Are you sure? Did they take a look at the studios at all or anything?
No, they weren't. I didn't bother to give them the Lee Grand Tour, but,
Yeah, they wanted to know, what's this Freedom's Phoenix thing, man? Because they seen our billboards and stuff up and all the stuff. They had to go, what are you guys? What'd you tell them?
Well, I told them what we are, a news portal to share the information that anyone can post the news. You're not it's not a top-down conspiracy where you only get to post what the people at the top tell you to post.
So what happens is they're going, it's a counter to us. Damn it. Because what if we don't want to have it up on there? Well, I DVR'd it anyway. So we're going to have it up on the site later today, what they don't want you to see, but you got to hear. All right, when we come back, we'll get to Gary in California when we'll start taking calls. 800-313-9443. We'll be back in just a little bit on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock. We'll be right back.
Oh,
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. And as the guys all wander in here, we have plenty to talk about from yesterday. We got Drew Phillips. Him and Jet Lacy went down and had some fun with the Southern Law Poverty Center event yesterday. There's kind of build up to this. You know, they these protests are getting out of hand. You know, and I bet you know they're looking for somebody with a gun. I mean, there might have been a bunch of others around the country. People, I mean, if you didn't have to look very hard to see them, certainly not here. So what happens is they make a big deal out of this. At a time that they're getting worried. You know, they go, well, these guys they're hot and heavy. People are getting upset. Do you think it would be a good idea to have guns while people are getting all angry? Heck yeah. Let me tell you what happens when you bring guns to protest. Everybody's nice. They're really, really nice. Yes, sir. Can I get you to step on, back onto the sidewalk from this area here, kind sir, with a gun? Would that be all right with you? Officer Friendly says to me, you don't have the gun. They have horses will boot you, step on you. I'm telling you, this happened. We had signs out. It was when Bush came to Phoenix Civic Center and we had signs out there said W-D-U-B-Y-A said www.warmonger.com. They didn't like that. No, that was they didn't like that. No. So, but you know, they see you with a firearm, and in fact, I had a flap. You know, it was an old Makarov thing, and so you can't tell if a gun's in there or not. So I just had an empty holster because I just wanted to see what would happen, but I didn't want to. Really, I'm a wimp. So I'm out there, and because I was right where all the big guys were coming in the back. So I'm just, and they knew who I was. So they left me alone. They started holding that sign. It's Ernie, man, fish on. So what happens is the other people in the other corner didn't have firearm. They had horses butting them up and stamping on them and so on and filing suit on or charging them with all kinds of different stuff and everything. I'm sitting there with a gun holster. They don't bother me. Think about it. It's legal. What are they going to do about it? Well, also, the big controversy in the freedom movement is a lot of guys have known this guy, seen him around. I recognize him from various different events around the country. And because he'd go to the Restore the Republic rally in Missouri, and he's in New Hampshire, Free Stater now, and so on. So he's kind of invested in this thing. And, a lot of times, those are the infiltrators. You never know. I just don't care. But the thing is that he had one of those things in his ear, and Drew knows what that was. Everybody's going, he's a Fed. He had something in his ear. So what was that all about, Drew?
Well, the story that I read, it was on RestoreTheRepublic.com and InfoWars, was that he is a known member of the Free State Project, and what they have out there is what they call Pork 411, and it's a automated phone system where you can call in if you have a problem with the authorities or a sobriety checkpoint or something like that. You call into this phone number, you leave a message saying, I'm here, I'm being arrested, et cetera, and then it calls all the members on that list of the Free State Project and alerts them to what's going on so they can show up with cameras and so on and so forth. And protect you from the man.
Now, I remember this. This is about a year ago they started this, and I think we reported on it. And what it was is an automated phone number that you just have a speed dial in your phone, and you got a headpiece on all the time or connected to your phone, and something happens like this. Boom, you call the number, and you just start talking. Say, this is where I'm at. This is what's going on. Officer, I can't read your name tag. Oh, you don't have any anymore. you got your shield down. You're just a man. You're a stormtrooper in black instead of white. I mean, I'm just going, wow. These parallels are amazing. So what's happened is this gentleman, they picked the wrong guy. He's not going to represent what they wanted. They wanted some crazy-eyed, knuckle-dragging, redneck, give me somebody to shoot because I can't. I mean, it's not working out for them. And when they are able to come back with the freedom rhetoric that like Thomas did, how do you cut it? Because you look at your footage of, the actual interview being taped, the taping being taped, which, see, we know better. Yeah, you come on down to Freedom's Phoenix Studios. We got plenty of cameras. You go right on ahead. Do what you want. So what was their demeanor? They first came in. They were trying to get you to do what? Because I know they're always going to try and get you to do something. I mean, were you able to handle it? You didn't even notice it? You're cool with it? Or were they kind of trying to steer you?
I just roll with the punches. Yeah, they didn't really tell me what they wanted to say. I mean, I asked them up front what they wanted, what kind of questions they were going to ask me, and they're just...
I saw a part where you kept having to do it over and over and over. And you said they're light. I thought you meant like the little red light on the camera. No, it was their spotlight, their white light kept going out all the time.
Right, so they liked that comment I had about him having a lot of guts, and he wanted to tape that, but the light kept going off and on, so he did like three takes, and I just kept them all in my tape.
You know, the thing is, though, is a lot of times if they're not getting what they want, you know, they'll try and disrupt you. You know, it's a technique. I mean, you know, Thomas probably doesn't notice it. He wouldn't see it for what it was. You know, oh, they're just having a mistake. It's honest. And I go, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I'll tell you, they screw with you every chance they get. Your mic gets turned off. It goes on. It comes off. It goes on. Right when they're doing it, they want to cut it. Dang it, you got to say it again. We want you to do it better. They'll try and frustrate you a little bit. These are games. And let me tell you one of the other games. They didn't put it up on their webpage, and they put every other segment up but that one.
Very interesting.
It's just, and when the guy, I go, look, you know, it's just everything else goes up but the gun thing. I mean, I just want you, you know, that's how it's going to be reported, FYI. You know, they're like, oh, dang it, I bet you if I go now, it might be up. But the, so this is how we are motivated all the time to uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies on freedomsphoenix.com. And one of the other things that we're going to be doing is, and we'll get Vin on sometime, because I think it's interesting to have an editor of a major newspaper that gets all the propaganda that comes across his desk. And he's experienced enough to know that this is stuff that has been done over and over and over, where you have people that are abused by government, and sooner or later they retaliate. And Lord knows what creative and weird way as you destroy somebody's life. In fact, there was a book that detailed this kind of rise in this. It was called Unintended Consequences by John Ross. He was an attorney in Missouri that wrote this book. And it was just fascinating at the time, because it ends with right after Waco. And it came out like within like a year after Waco. And it was 94 when we read this. And man, it's true today, because you can see it coming. You can see it. It's very clear. And that's why I think Chris Matthews was freaking out, because he's at all these protests too. And he's the mouthpiece for this stuff. He's going around saying stupid stuff like, why are you bringing a GD gun to a protest? Well, you know.
Because we can.
I mean, you know, so we can keep our First Amendment. Why do you think the Second Amendment's there? It's to protect the First. You know, that's why they made it the Second. When that one gives out, you use this one. That's the way it works. Hey, let's go to David in California. We got you there, David? David? Yeah, we lost David. Let's go ahead and...
Hold on.
Wait a minute. She says she's got you. Go ahead, David.
Oh, much better. That little click. Hey, hey, Ernest. You know, I'm about 50 here, and I remember back in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, this whole issue of whether or not to have guns in public demonstrations, because, you know, it came up that if there was going to be a revolution, the way it was structured during Nixon and whatnot, you were going to inevitably be buying guns from the mob, and then the mob would have some hold on you, or they could rat you out pretty easy, you know, strictly by... you know, allowing it to get to that level. And I think probably one of the things that really helped, you know, ease the whole thing was when Patty Hearst got taken as a kidnap. Yeah. I don't know if you remember what her ransom was, but it was not give us cash. It wasn't this or that or the other. It was feed the poor. That William Randolph Hearst, the owner of this fat newspaper chain, you know, the Rupert Murdoch of the day, that William Randolph Hearst had to feed the poor. So what Hearst did was he went out and he bought freezer trucks full of turkeys. And, you know, those things are about as big as a bowling ball and about as heavy, right? So he got a bunch of thugs on the back of semi-trucks, and when the poor came walking up to this feeding program, those old boys started hurling them out like bowling balls right into the crowd, cracking skulls and whatnot. Well, all of a sudden, America knew, you know, something was desperately wrong when the owner of a newspaper chain would pull that kind of crap to, you know, get his own daughter released. I mean, what an insult, you know. So it didn't have to come to guns. It was recognized that this was organized thuggery that was running the government, and it didn't have anything to do with legitimate political theory. It had to do with just plain thugs running the government. And so, you know, you look at today. I don't know if you've done any stories about this family, you know, the C Street family, they call it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Look it up online. I mean, it's a big deal. It's, you know, they've caught, I don't know, 10 congressmen and about 6 or 8 senators are members of what's called the family. It's Reverend Moon, essentially, but it's even worse than him because it's like some of these old organized crime, drug-running, you know, con artists, military, the very people you remember Eisenhower was the one that warned America about the military-industrial complex, right?
You know, this is one thing. Yeah, we're getting off beam here. You know, I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. But, you know, the one thing about Reverend Moon is that I think he's the one in charge. He owns Washington Times. And he's in the military-industrial complex. He owns, you know, a lot of people don't know that, support his church, and he's all peace and going around and selling daisies at airports or whatever. And what happened was, you know, he sells guns. You know, this guy's a big munitions guy, you know, and they don't. And then, of course, he has his own congressman in his pocket. And so he's kind of a protected guy. So there's, you know, all this kind of corruption. And I think what the caller is trying to segue into is that a lot of times when you have a perceived injustice by people, they are going, you know, feed the poor. You know, feed. But how do you do that? Is one guy who's throwing out turkeys going to do that? No, it's freedom's the answer. What's the question? You know, that's how you do it. You know, give us more freedom, we'll feed ourselves. Thank you very much. Well, we got a great show coming in at the bottom of the hour. I got more to talk to you about, but I'm going to tell you what's coming here in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here from freedomsphoenix.com studios. Now, let's go ahead and I want to summarize what we were talking about today, and then I want to prep you for what's coming up in the next half hour. Now, let's do that first. Bob Prechter from Elliott Wave is a longtime supporter. I've had him on the radio since forever, and he has a very interesting way of looking at the world. Now, a lot of times, I mean, you got technical analysis. You know, he's big stock market guy. You know, you want to buy my newsletter, my analysis on how you can be filthy, stinking rich. You know, it costs you this much. That's how it works. Now, of course, he's an author of a lot of books, too, but Conquering the Crash, you know. Now, this has been this guy has been very, very effective at sharing his perspective on how he's able to determine trends in the market. And it's an interesting – it's chaos theory, basically, and it comes down to this. And I'm just going to sum it up so that you kind of get an understanding when he comes on talks about it. One, he's predicting a massive crash, massive. He has been. There's a cycle. It's called the Elliott Wave. And the best way to sum it up is this way. All organic systems have a pattern. I'll give you an example. They're called fractals. When you see a repeating pattern in life, you know, it's the shape of a conch shell, or it's weather patterns, or it's anything to do with life. It has kind of a wave. It has a pulse to it. You know, things go up, things go down, but they go up and down in kind of a repeating pattern. And if you look back on things like the flooding of the Nile, for thousands of years, the Egyptians would keep track on the height of the Nile during the flood season, the highest that it went, the lowest that it went. And for thousands and thousands of years, you would see this pattern that would emerge. And then you could take and that pattern over, you know, a 4,000-year wave, and you could take and all of a sudden you see that same pattern repeating every 200 years or every 100 years or every, you know, 60 years. And then you maybe it gets a little garbled and so on. But there is a pattern that repeats in there on a small and a larger scale. And that's what the stock market in decades ago, there was another gentleman named Elliott that came up with this, and they followed this and used their own little twist and modern computerized whatever. And we'll talk about it with Mr. Prechter. But what they've done is they've been able to determine the interaction of the organic system called human beings, that you have 6 billion people interacting directly and indirectly with each other that is manifested in numbers called the stock market. I've asked them before, I go, but what about all the gaming, the corruption, the lies, the fraud, the deceit? He goes, well, that's all part of it. Well, you think that never happened? That's humans, man. That's how they work. I mean, it's, you know, that's part. It doesn't matter because in the end, reality always, you know, corrects it. It's this free market system thing. It's what Dr. Paul keeps going on about. You can't regulate the market except through free actions of individuals. If you try and game it, if you try and turn dials and so on, all you're doing is just making the waves bigger. You know, it's just you'll hold it back. It's like, you know, a dam that will always overflow. It'll always bust. Then you have big corrections and big waves. If you just let the market flow, it'll just, you know, it does a step. You know, it's like three, you know, moves up and then two big ones down, three moves up, two big ones down. It's like a five wave. And that's what he's talking about now. We're in the fifth wave to where it's going to, you know, it goes back up. You got this recovery. Everything's saved. Stock market's at 9,400. It's all good. Everything's fixed. We improved our economy by something. We started manufacturing something. We're going to, everybody's better off because of something. I don't know what it is, but dang it, it's 9,400. You know, and so you have this, I'm not even sure why, and we'll talk about it, but what follows? It comes crashing down. Well, we're going to talk about that and how to predict this and talk about the Elliott wave. In summary of today, what did we cover? We have Southern Law Poverty Center comes to Phoenix talking about all the hate crimes and stuff. And they're really having to, you know, pick over the years and bottoms of barrel to come up with even examples here in Arizona. But, you know, they do that. They whip this up. At the same time, they got a guy carrying a gun to a protest in New Hampshire, no less, where live free or die state. Chris Matthews is his GD gun. They're all freaking out. And you know he doesn't do that unless he's got permission or direction to do this. So it brings up this issue. And what happened here in Arizona, I guarantee it happened all around the country. They're going to look for people that are, you know, kind of put, you know, guns at protests along with militia and birthers and We the People and, you know, Ron Paul supporters and whatever the heck they can do to try and bring and lump everybody up in this MEAC report. Everybody needs to be investigated. You got a bumper sticker. This is where this is coming. And why is he so upset? I think he personally was afraid. Should he? Should he be? Now, he's at all these protests. He's reporting on it. Nobody's got Secret Service around Chris Matthews. Got a bunch of these guys with signs and guns, you know, and you're sitting there spewing the lies. You think you might be concerned a little bit for your own safety? He might. He should, you know, but the cure for that is stop lying. Don't be part of it. But you know where that's going. So, you know, where's this revolution going? I don't know. I think we should keep it a love-olution. It's all love, man. Because if you get violent, you play right into their hands. But you be nice. You be nice. You be nice. Right up until it's time not to be nice. When is that? It's an individual decision. If anybody tells you it's time, it may be for them. You make the decision. You get informed. You go to freedomsphoenix.com. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, Conquering the Crash with Robert Prechter from Elliott Wave International. Now, here's a, you know, as a young man, he's working with Merrill Lynch as in analysis department in New York, and he starts publishing the Elliott Wave Theorist, monthly forecasting publication since 79, and all of a sudden, he's a, you know, he's a guru. He's a hero of mine. Welcome, Bob.
Hey, nice to be here.
You know, the reason I wanted to talk to you, other than, you know, you're such a nice and hell of a human being, is that you were on yesterday. I saw a piece that we had on Freedom's Phoenix about the prediction of the fifth wave. Now, first, before we know what that means, I need you to talk about Elliott Wave Theory, how that applies to systems. You know, it's an organic system. It's like this pulse of the universe kind of thing, and that applies to the stock market because you get, like, billions of people interacting, and you can put that to numbers, so you can analyze it, predict it, use it, and then, of course, you've been very successful at this. Explain it to the listeners for me.
Well, I think the briefest possible explanation is to say that I think waves of optimism and pessimism are natural to human societies. They don't come as a result of news. They are part of the way human beings relate to each other, and they share moods. That's part of what we do. I think in turns, it gives us booms and busts. It gives us periods of euphoria and achievement and periods of retrenchment where the species is being tested. And it's all in a fractal pattern. R.N. Elliott discovered this idea in 1938, wrote a book about it. And later, mathematicians in the 60s, 70s, and 80s began to say, yeah, it looks like a lot of nature takes the form of a fractal. What was different was that Elliott...
Well, define fractal. Define fractal.
It's a design whereby the smaller degree fluctuations are versions of the larger degree fluctuations are versions of the even larger degree fluctuations.
So it's a repeating pattern.
Yeah, it's the most general definition is that the irregularities are the same at all scales. But Elliott went a little further and said, look, we've got the same pattern at all scales. And once you identify that pattern, you can get a handle on the way the mood is going to swing in society next. And when the mood swings up, people do certain things. When it moves down, they do opposite things.
Well, do you balance this with, I don't know, what kind of analysis do you do to be able to plug it into predictions like this?
Well, some of the most important areas of analysis that we do, besides these wave patterns, are confirmatory indicators. If indeed there are waves of optimism and pessimism, that means that at the peaks of these waves of optimism, you should see readings showing that people are indeed very optimistic. We've got at least two dozen indicators trying to track how people feel about the markets. When they get extremely one-sided, if that coincides with one of our patterns completing, we have a lot more confidence on saying it's a top. And, of course, the reverse happens at the bottom.
So we in heavy confidence. Somebody got a lot of confidence out there. We're at 9,400, man. Dow, I mean, where'd that come from? I mean, because that's one thing. I remember we talked about this in previous interviews. I'm going, well, what about all the corruption and the just gaming of the system and everything? And I remember you saying, well, it's just part of it.
Yeah, it happens. It's never ended, has it? In the history of man.
I couldn't think of a better answer. But so right now, we're at the top. This is what you're predicting. You know, go ahead and describe the wave. Is there a general pattern to this? Is it something that you look for? What's the shape of it? How many ups and downs? How does that work?
There are five waves in the direction of the one larger trend and three waves against. That's the simplest expression. So when there are five waves in the upward direction, you know two things. You know, number one, that that move is over for the time being and there'll be a three-wave pullback. But you also know that the trend is in that larger direction. Once we complete an even larger series of five waves up, you get even more important tops. In 2007, we ended a very, very long multi-decade sequence of five waves. So we've been saying all along, look out, there's going to be a slide into depression. There's going to be declines in all the major financial markets, including real estate, stocks, and commodities. And you have to be on the defensive side. As an individual, you don't have to suffer in this situation. Society goes through these waves. It's a fact of life. You know, let's deal with it.
And what are you suggesting? Camping? I mean, what are we looking to do?
No, people can actually live very, very well if you get out of the way of the big declines. Some of the richest families in America were the people that got out of the period in the late 1920s when we had the Roaring Twenties, and sat out of it until 1933, and then started buying up Florida beach property and other types of real estate and stocks at 10 cents on the dollar. Those were the people that ended up creating dynasties. So when I wrote this book, Conquer the Crash, that's what I told readers to do. I said, look, put your money into cash. So when we come to this great bottom sometime in the coming decade, you'll be able to buy stocks at incredibly low prices compared to the outrageous overvaluation that we have had throughout the late 90s and throughout the 2000s so far.
When you say cash, I mean, you're talking Federal Reserve notes, gold, other commodities. I mean, help me with that.
Well, unfortunately, cash is no longer gold. It stopped being our money back in 1934, when Roosevelt said, okay, that's it, we're not going to allow contracts in gold anymore. It's a very sad thing, but in the meantime, we have to deal with what we have. And what we have is fiat money that is has been dictated as what we'll have to spend, which are dollars, which are tied to nothing. But the entire structure of IOUs in the world, $50 trillion worth of bonds, notes, and bills, denominated in dollars throughout the world, are the problem. People don't owe gold to anybody. They owe dollars. To get those dollars, they're going to have to scramble very hard just to pay interest on debt and much less the principal. So what is about to come back in demand, I think, are going to be the dollars that survive. Some people think they've got them just because they've got a closet full of IOUs, but most of those IOUs, I think, eventually will be shown to be no good. So the remaining dollars can buy more stuff.
What?
Well, look at it this way. Today, you can buy twice as much real estate as you could at the top in 05, right?
Yep.
For every dollar you got. You can buy twice the shares of stock if you want to. I don't. But if you did, you could buy twice the shares of all these big companies that you could have bought in 07. And, incredibly, you can buy twice the commodities. You can fill your backyard full of all the commodities in the CRB index for 50 cents on the dollar relative to where they were in the early 2008.
Okay, so we're leading up to one thing. This is what differentiates you from a lot of people, is that you're talking about deflation.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I think that differentiates me from everybody that I know of.
Well, tell me why, this is a battle going on. I mean, there's some of the guys, and I agree with you. The way things are, you could see that you're not going to be able to sustain these prices. They're trying to by – it's like – I just want to pound my forehead on the table when you see things that they're doing, just like they did in the Great Depression, where they're plowing under fields and killing livestock. They're putting sand in the crankcases of these cash for clunkers. You got nice, great, wonderful vehicles that are being traded in. They're destroying them so that poor people can't buy them.
Yes, but think about what you just said. Because of this science of socionomics, it's very young, but we're trying to do to get it on the map. We were able to predict back in March, look, folks, there's going to be a big bear market rally. And when it's over, everybody's going to tell you the recession is over, and they're going to tell you that the stimulation package worked. Guess what? Here we are in August, 5 months later, and that's exactly what the news is telling us. Well, we were also able to say several years ago that the government was going to respond to the crisis, just as the banks tried to stop the 29 crash and the governments tried to keep agricultural prices from going down in the early 30s. As you say, you know, they destroyed crops and they shot cattle. It was an outrage with people starving all over the place. And now they're even destroying houses in some areas, and we've got homeless people. I mean, does that make sense? And as you say, destroying cars that are perfectly good. Some guy in the margin of survival could use one of these cars, and they're ruining them. So you've got the same psychology in government now that you had in 1930 and 31. I think that fits my scenario, not the 70s idea that we're heading into hyperinflation.
Okay. Now, let's go ahead and put you know, you're on record. I mean, it's not like you haven't already been on record, but you know, let's do it here.
No, for better or for worse, I'm there.
And the prediction that you're making is that we're going to be going into a lot lower prices in general. I mean, I'm sure some things are going to be high and whatever, but you know, in general, we're going to have we're not going to experience this hyperinflation that a lot of people are talking about ever, or is it just now?
Now, we may do it eventually. In fact, I wrote in the book, once deflation has run its course and the debts are destroyed, that would at least allow for the possibility of a superinflation or a runaway inflation. But until that happens, the sea, the ocean, the giant ball of debt that's out there now is bigger than the money creation that's happened so far by such a huge factor that so far it hasn't really made a dent.
Okay, now this is where people, you know, don't understand the math. What you're saying is that the debt that has been created is so enormous, so multiplied by so many various whatever things, that there's no way that they have enough dollars to satisfy those debts. So you're not going to have the hyperinflation, the debt's eating up the dollars too much.
Right. I think if they try to inflate, the price of debt will come down and people will be losing value that way. So far, they really haven't tried as hard as everyone seems to think. The Fed has created a trillion new base money dollars. That's a whole lot of dollars since they started out at $55 billion. It's a tremendous multiple. But with 50-plus trillion dollars of IOUs out there, and some people estimate $200 to $1,000 trillion worth of other types of derivatives and promises, not to mention Social Security, Medicaid, and all these other promises they've made. All of these are IOUs. They're going to have to step up the printing presses a lot faster to stave off deflation. And the Fed thinks already that they've solved the problem. So I think, once again, the market is going to do its stealth thing. It's going to sneak up on the Fed just like it did in 2007. Before they know what's going on, it's going to be plummeting again, and they'll be scrambling around as they did before.
Well, and they're going to be doing, you know, stimulus 14 or whatever, and keep trying to, you know, pump this stuff in there. And this is where the fear, because a lot of people that I trust their opinion also, while they understand what you're talking about, they're going, yeah, of course, there's going to be hyperinflation. I'm like, why? Because they won't stop printing the money. They will keep doing it.
Well, that's a claim, number one. It's a claim without understanding how much credit is out there and debt is ready to implode. Three, it's made by people that have already watched their oil investment going down from $147.50 all the way down to $33 or $34 a barrel. Those were massive surprises to the inflationist camp, and they were not surprises to me. I was surprised by the rally, not the decline. So, I mean, we'll see how it works out. Everybody believes this scenario, from economists pretty much all the way through the bears that we all know and love, and a lot of them are friends of mine. But let me just put one thing out for your listeners. At the bottom in early March, March 6th and March 9th of this year, people were worried about the biggest contraction since the Great Depression. They were talking about deflation has taken hold. They were scared to death. That was the cover story, and that was the time to buy stocks. And we covered all shorts on the 23rd of February and said, look, the market's going to have a huge bear market rally. You had the cover story. It made perfect sense. Today you've got another cover story, and it makes perfect sense. And what is it doing? It's trying to convince people to buy oil now that it's doubled, to buy stocks now that they've rebounded 50% in five short months. And now people say, okay, we ought to be bullish now that the S&P is at 1,000, but we didn't like it at 667. This is the way markets work. That's why they fool people.
Now, they? Oh, you're one of those they people? Who's they?
No, I said they, the markets.
Okay.
The markets.
Well, no, I mean, to me, they is really simple. They, them, those won't leave me alone. That's who it is. But,
yeah, exactly.
But the thing is that there is manipulations. I mean, and that kind of enters into a lot of this, too. I mean, you know, it's human beings interacting because they can. But the thing is that you're looking at the market. How much does reality come into determining what happens versus manipulation? I mean, where's
okay, I'm not a believer in that there's very much manipulation going on. I think there's a lot of manipulation when it comes to stealing. In other words, people that should have gone broke went to the federal government and the Fed, and they said, you know, we're about to go broke, and we don't deserve it. We've been making oversized profits for 25 straight years, in some cases since 1933 to the present. But, hey, who are we to go under? We think the taxpayer and the future taxpayer should bail us out. And the government said, sure, that's a good idea. I think that's fine. But all they did, as you well know, is they didn't fix anything. They simply transferred the losses from the people that actually deserve them over to the innocent people who happen to be earn enough money and an honest living to pay their taxes.
Okay, now this is what made me very interested in Elliott theory, and we've been talking for years about this stuff, is that these kinds of reactions, these kinds of activities have a psychological effect on the market and on the individuals that make up the market.
Well, I don't agree with that.
You don't think so?
No, I think the psychology comes first. They have an impression on people's psychology, but it does not change the direction of the mood cycle. In fact, everybody got away with this nonsense until the mood cycle turned down. As soon as people began to get more pessimistic, the game was up. So,
but you don't think that makes you more pessimistic?
Not in terms of your mood. If you, in other words, look at March is a terrific example. We had all of this news come out about how the economy was falling down a cliff, and what did the market do? It jumped 50%. Now the good news is coming out. News lags the market. The market is so far ahead of the news, it's anywhere between 2 and 12 months ahead of the news, depending on what types of news we're talking about.
Political well, I got to go with you, man. You've been right about this all these years, and you're coming up for a big test here. You know, it's going to – well, I mean, you know, the fact that it's going to plummet is probably not a big shock to a lot of people. But, you know, you're coming out saying we're going into a major decline in what? Prices, income, everything, quality of living, standard. You know, there's people are going to be able to take advantage of it, some that aren't. I mean, what are we really specifically looking at happening?
Well, most economists think we've had two recessions and the second one is ending. I think we have been in a depression since 2000. Now, most people look back at a depression and say, oh, that's when you have 25% unemployment. In other words, they're talking about the bottom week in an economic contraction that lasted 3 years back in the 20s and early 30s. Well, we've been in a depression for quite a few years now. But we're not at the bottom yet, so we haven't seen the worst of it. Yes, there's going to be more unemployment. There'll be all kinds of serious troubles. I think we'll have banks closing at a more rapid rate than they are today, and I think businesses will be going under. This is the net result of having way too much credit and debt in the system, and we're finally wringing it out. Now that the cycle has turned toward pessimism, it's very much like a changeover in 1929. It's going to be a relentless thing with rallies along the way. Well, this is one of those rallies.
Do you think that we're going to be on the – we used to say a lot back in the 90s, can we hurry up and get to a police state so we can leave, you know?
And, well, you know, it's funny. The more you go down that road, it's a good thing for us libertarians, I think, believe it or not, because the more the government tries to control things, the more it's going to be revealed they don't know what the heck they're doing.
Well, that doesn't take a whole lot of effort to figure that out. We'll be back to finish up with Bob Proctor here in just a little bit here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Hey, pay attention. Interesting, is it not, to have a peek into the future? We'll share more with you in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Constant sorrow, the death and damnation alive. I feel so bad. Bob's making me feel sad. But on the other side, you know, in the end, freedom always wins, man. It just gets really messy first. Now, the thing I wanted to talk about, Bob, is that we were as low as, what was it, like 6,600 in the Dow. Not that Dow means anything because they keep changing it all the time anyway, whoever's in it. But the point is that we were from 14,000-something down to 6,600, and all of a sudden, and this is within a year and a half or whatever, and boom, we're going back up. It's went over 9,400, you know, yesterday, and people going, woohoo, it's all fixed. I mean, yeah. You know, what are you thinking? If we're looking at a 6,600 low here, are you thinking like what? You know, zero? I mean, what are we looking to happen?
Well, I think the next wave down should be stronger and more severe than what we already saw. So that gives you a little clue of how much I think the bear market is over. What we'll have to do, though, is live through this bear market rally. And I really want to make clear that all the market has done is come up to our minimum target area. We said back in around the lows that we thought the S&P could get to 1,000 to 1,100. That means the Dow in the 9,000, 10,000 area. They've done that, okay? But they haven't gotten to the upper end. So, you know, if a couple months from now they're a little bit higher, that's fine with me. But I don't think they're going to give us another 50% move. I think by far most of it's over. And besides all that, safety is really not a big problem. if people say, oh, well, there's an opportunity cost if you're wrong. Well, right, but who's right all the time? If you sit in the safest possible cash equivalents while these things are happening, the thing that you will avoid is the next big down wave. And I think 2010 is going to be a very tough year for people who are invested.
Wow. And psychologically, as we, you know, because you're talking about moods and so on, I mean, a lot of weird things are going on. I give you one I wanted to get to today and we didn't have time, but, you know, state takes extra steps to battle flu in the fall. Yeah, Massachusetts health authorities started deputizing dentists and other health workers to do vaccinations. And I'm going, deputizing? What the heck was that? You know, and you can go on about how they're going to be forcing a lot of stuff. I'm thinking that there's going to be, you know, some kind of a reaction by people that they're going to be, I know, and it's not even just going to be a financial mood. It's going to have a wider effects. Do you cover any of that stuff, or is it all represented in financials?
No, absolutely. The financial is only the first thing that responds to social mood, because people can buy and sell stocks or other things instantly on their moods. But other things take a lot of time. The economy takes a few months to lag because business people might, you know, turn slightly less pessimistic and decide to expand a business. But to do that takes weeks, if not months, of preparation work, meetings, and so on. It shows up later. Well, one of the big lagging things is government action. Government is the slowest organization there is on the earth, and it takes a long time for it to mobilize social mood and make changes in its policy. But ever since 2000, the government's got more authoritarian. It was all through the Bush years. It's still getting more authoritarian here in the Obama years, and there's a lot more of that to come. Along with, by the way, I think backlash from people sometime late this year, early next. I think you're going to see a public backlash against it.
In what form?
Well, I'm not sure. All we can say is that people's moods are going to lead them to want to fight, and they're going to fight the biggest kid in the block at the time. Business, but now it's government.
They just amp up our fluoride dose.
give you a vaccination. Maybe they can
straighten
you out.
Man, you pegged it. Bob said. Hey, thanks for coming on, Bob. I appreciate you coming on and sharing this with you. It's been really enlightening. Thank you very much.
Okay, Ernie. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too, man. And bye. You too. I'm telling you, take this seriously. It's going to get bad. Prepare yourself. We'll see you tomorrow.